Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction? Devin Tilley here, and we're on episode 2 of our deep dive series here at the Housing Innovation Alliance Summit here at the University of Denver. We got a great one for you here with Brent Forsberg, who is the president of TA Forsberg. And what we're going to unpack for you today within this Housing Innovation deep dive, first, it's cool sitting here in person looking out at the beautiful University of Denver. When we were talking through, when Dennis and I were dialing in all of the different interviews, he's like, we really want someone who theory and practice putting that together. And he goes, oh, Brent's the guy. He's a University of Denver executive PhD student, and he's been a developer. And we're going to unpack that story. And the main message is that a developer who is part of an innovation conference. When I came this morning, he was the one checking people in, helping getting in there and putting this all together. And the main message is that we need to innovate, and we need developers that are really helping us execute from the trenches. And my main perspective is that how do we make innovation happen? It sounds so simple, but I wanted to take this pause and talk with Brent today because you're out there having all these conversations, and there's so much stuff that could be done, but how do you actually make it happen from a developer with Michigan? So, Brent, it's an honor. Thanks for helping us get all checked in, getting this all going. We're in the middle of the conference today. What do you say? Let's learn about your favorite beverage and have as much fun as possible, huh?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. This is really exciting, and you're right. The view's up here. What a beautiful campus, and it's just great to be here. And for my favorite beverage, that is easy. It's coffee. I drink a lot of coffee, and here in Denver, a few of the local coffee shops like Kaladi have become my favorites as I visit out here and back home, finding any local coffee shop that I can go in and see what they're roasting and try is always a real treat.
Awesome. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
You know, one of my favorite places in the country is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I know I'm a little biased being from Michigan, but if you haven't been there, especially in the summer, it is worth visiting. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, you don't get quite the height that you get in Summit County and out here in Colorado, but when it comes to just diversity of ecosystems, looking at the Great Lakes, it's truly an amazing spot, and I try to spend as much time in the summer as I can up there.
Awesome. If you go there, what's one thing you got to check out?
So get to the Keweenaw Peninsula, check out that area, get out to the point, so where you're standing out in the middle of Lake Superior, it's absolutely beautiful. Watch the sunset and sunrise up there. And then a little bit farther south into the Marquette area, if you're a mountain biker, it is a mecca in the country. They've got hundreds of miles of trails, and it's truly a special place. Great restaurants and just a fun place to visit.
Cool. What do you like to do outside the construction arena that we passionately call the art of construction?
So mountain biking is one of my favorite activities in the winter. I ski. Cool. My kids all downhill ski. And wife, we have a great time doing that. So really spending outdoor activities, hiking, everything that we can do is some of my favorite things.
Awesome. Well, Brent, I'm super excited to get to know you with the rest of the Art of Construction Master Facilitators. What is your story that led you being the president of TA Forsberg, Inc.?
So I'm very lucky. I'm in a family business. My grandfather started in the early 50s as a road builder. My father was in underground sewer work, and both of them started doing development a little bit in the starting in the 70s and 80s, and in the late 90s, early 2000s, moved into development a little bit more, especially single family homes, understanding the need of growth of communities. And in the early 2000s, I realized that that was something that I was very passionate about, especially when we look at the living systems of the communities and understanding how do we create the places that people want to live and be a part of. So it's just a passion that's continued to grow. I was born and bred in the construction industry, so that Nice. Helped, and it's all I know.
All right. Well, let's try to unpack some of those things that you know. I want to start off on this conversation by today we're having the Pitch Fest competition and all these great innovations and these great people coming together. And they had the winner from On3 last year talking at our lunch break. And he talked, and they one of the question was, is how do you really integrate innovation? And the conversation was really kind of that top down or bottom up. And they really talked about how you have to have the top down, or they just kind of turn a blind eye to innovation. I'm really curious, as you know, the generations of you growing up in Michigan and looking at the website, and we'll make sure to put stuff in the show notes of all the cool stuff you're doing. Can you talk through, from your point of view, top down, bottom up, little of both? What's your take on all that?
Absolutely. You know, with the lunch conversation, what's great is looking at from the business standpoint, the leadership really does have to say, yes, this is something that we're doing. You know, it's tough in business because we've got so much thrown at us. There's so much volatility in this industry. Things are changing. You're dealing with the market pressures. So trying to put innovation into something is hard for that day-to-day work routine that's already pretty full. So it does take that leadership to make that decision that said, look, we're doing this, and to be part of that. But I also look at it that takes a bottom-up approach, too, that the leader has to be the one that's leading that charge, that's out there looking at it and not just putting it on the team. And it's the same approach we use when we're working in communities. When we're looking at projects to bring in, the one thing that when we go into communities we always talk about is, look, most likely I'm not going to live here. I can't live in every community and every building that I build. So the people that live there are the ones that are going to have that connection to it. It's going to affect their daily lives. And as we build these multifamily and single family homes, it's important for us to understand how we design, how we connect them to the space that they're in, the community that they're around, is going to affect the next 25, 50, 75 years of what those patterns and what that quality of life and experience is going to be. So for me, starting with this, it's innovating from that bottom-up piece where it's getting the people that are going to be affected by these changes and by these designs into the conversation as early as possible. We'll sometimes be in communities 2 years before we'll even purchase a piece of property to just understand what is the local culture there, what can we do, and how can our product of multifamily and single family homes and some of even the light mixed use supporting commercial enhance that local culture and create something that can help that community continue to grow. So you know, that's kind of the philosophy that we look at, and I think how those approaches work together.
Yeah, so I want you to unpack maybe some actual stories of projects. So when Dennis and I were dialing in the different guests, he said, we really want, you know, Brent has done some really cool project in the Michigan area. Can you talk through a couple of those projects from your point of view?
Yeah, I'd love to. So, you know, a few of the things that we've focused on in the last 8-9 years is how do we address this issue of affordability? And this is a national conversation that's happening. You go back to the 1990s, early 90s, 75% of new homes that built, according to the National Association of Home Builders, were affordable to the median incomes of areas. We're down under 25% right now, and it's getting worse as we're seeing this cost rise, and we can get into the factors later of what's causing that. But when we started looking at these projects, we said, okay, what can we do to begin to shift the conversation a little bit? And not by doing anything that's disruptive. You know, some of the conversations here is talking about not just being disruptive, but how do you make incremental change?
Yeah, and that's an important one because it's ironic. You'd think from the outside, if you're at the Housing Innovation Alliance and it's all about, you'd think it's much more about disruption, but the longer I play the great game of innovation, it's more of what is the low-hanging fruit of meeting the industry where they are.
Absolutely. And research works the same way, and we'll get into that a little bit. But that's where we started looking at our projects. So we took apart all of the inputs that go into the supply side of housing. We knew in the market that we're working in Lansing and most of the country, the demand side's there. So we're at a shortage and a deficit, and we've been that way since 2009. So we said, okay, we have square footage to work with. But then we also have the process of construction. So we looked at going back and looking at the original neighborhood patterns of the 1920s and 30s bungalow that really grew the American city during that industrial age. So we redesigned some of those products for modern living, added in innovations that could help with the energy use, quality within the house, and also picking neighborhoods that necessarily haven't seen growth for a while. So, you know, the projects that we're getting the most known for in Michigan are these infill type projects in areas that hadn't seen investment in 20, 30 years, and coming in with 600 to 1,030 square foot homes that are built for today's lifestyles.
So if I'm hearing you right, city infill where people are and want to be, you're getting into the communities and finding that infilling with smaller square footage to make it work, but then driving different innovation. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, and both in the largest city of Lansing, Michigan, but also in some smaller communities like Eaton Rapids, where a piece of property went back on tax sale that was 1.14 acres. That was just kind of this odd-shaped piece on a 90-degree bend in one of the roads. We were able to fit 12 houses and park it and still keep green space in there by using a courtyard or pocket-type neighborhood design. And that's not something that traditional zoning would have allowed, but by working with this community, coming in, showing them examples of projects, they were willing to let us do this. And right now, we've got three complete and five under construction, and then we'll get the last couple under construction here in the next 2 months.
Cool.
And part of the reason I'm out here is looking at what are the technologies that becomes the next generation of housing and making those incremental changes. So using structure insulated panels instead of traditional stick framing is something that we're looking at for speeding up construction a little bit. And then also from the air infiltration, the standpoint that we have now a solid wall that's all coming in one piece with the foam in the center. So, and those are the types of things that we're looking at that as we continue to evolve our housing, that we can look at, and coming to these type of conferences are so important for me because we're meeting the people that are at the cutting edge, right? So what's coming down the line that we can be part of and help look at that, how can these be part of the conversation of what housing is as we move into the mid-21st century?
And I appreciate you expanding on that, is that, you know, I'm sitting here with the green band because I was here last year for the first time, and you're here with the orange band because you're here for the first time this year. Of people like you and I, and I think that's what I love doing podcasts at events, because you're seeing in the passion and the alignment on how that all comes together. You had mentioned some of the innovations. You said we're pushing innovations in these infill. You're talking about SIPs and other things you're looking at as a builder. When I ask you as a developer innovation, you said it's both top down and bottom up. But when I say the word innovation to you, what does that mean to you as a developer, where you've come, where you grew up in this industry, and where you want to go with it?
Innovation for me is change. And
developers love change, right?
Well, that's the thing. And when I go into a community, it's...
My answer is usually they don't, as long as it's the P&L and it's driving more dollars, right? And that's the hard part of this stuff.
And that's where our industry is right now because of all the regulations. Everything gets tough, right? Because 90% of your business is working with the banks, working with your contractors to get the cost and get a project that you can just build. And we get caught in that cycle, especially in the last few years coming through this rapid inflation. It's hard to look that, okay, how do we move forward when you're just trying to hold things together and get projects out of the ground so that way your business can survive. But you know, the one thing to remember as a developer is development in itself is change. And that's what's scary for communities. Mm-hmm. So walking into a community, people look at me and I already have that distrust because I'm going to do something different, even if they don't like what's there. The fact that I'm coming into the room and something is going to change in their neighborhood, people get nervous and scared. So, you know, it's the same thing when we look at innovation at these conferences, right? All of the subcontractors, all of the people that are out inspecting our sites, the minute you mention something different, the inspectors are all just looking at you cross-eyed and, you know, upset because they don't necessarily want to go through disrupting how their models are working. And this is where that incremental piece is important. And then understanding how do we get to, when we find good innovation, that can be making the incremental change, getting the education out there, showing the process that that is safe and a better way to do things. And that's how this system will evolve and have the innovation over time.
I love that. I wrote down here, developers, development in itself is change.
Yes.
So you got to stop and think about that to say, hear me being disruptor saying, well, developers don't like change. But the developer on the other side of the table is telling me, well, Devin, that's what a developer does, is you're having to change, like you talked about, that infill neighborhood, about changing the way that had been done to the past to the future. So to say they don't like change is kind of an oxymoron, because that's actually what they're doing. But they're having to try to drive change that actually happens, because there's a lot of snowflakes when it comes to innovation, too.
Yeah, you know, when you look at this, though, I think it's more the fact that this process is so overregulated. And it's so hard to have anything that bumps against any of those edges. I had a developer friend of mine who's in his mid-70s, who him and I, he's done some amazing projects around the country. But we were having a conversation. He goes, you know, he goes, developers, at the end of the day, follow the path of least resistance. It's like water flowing. Because
it's hard to argue that, too.
It's already such a hard business to succeed in for long periods of time. So when you look at it from that standpoint, when you have a pathway forward, you want to stick in that as much as possible. But at the same time, as we see the changes in our communities, of the lifestyles, of how people are making their decisions of where they want to live and being more into that experience model of what they want, you know, it's making it harder. So we have to look at, okay, how do we keep repackaging projects, make those connections? And for me, it's an absolute business case for development. So when you look at development itself, you have kind of two things going on. You have the developers that build, sell, and are working on the fees, that have investors that want that 2 to 5 year return profile of getting things built, stabilized, cashing out, and then going on to the next project. My company is a little bit different, where we're a value add build and hold. So generally, when we do a project, first of all, single family homes are very important. We do single family home projects a lot to make sure that we're promoting home ownership, because that's how areas stay stable for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. But we also do a lot of multifamily. And with that, making sure that when we're making those decisions there on 5 to 10 year models, understanding that we're going to be holding, and then working with investors too to understand that, look, you know, as we build these up, it's just going to be a little bit longer time frame. So it allows us to adjust our decisions and allows a little more flexibility in what we're able to look at for our projects.
I love that. So after this podcast, we're going to go down there and listen to Jared Polis, the governor of Colorado, talk and give his perspective to where we're here in the great state of Colorado where I live, and it's an honor to be sharing these stories on the global megaphone of like casting a big net, but the riches in the niches. And we'll be paring down onto the final question that we always ask here for you, for our builders and affiliates to go out there and grow their business. But the reason I kind of leave that conduit out there is because on every one of these innovation podcasts, I keep telling myself and the rest of the Art of Construction Master Facilitators is you got to take three things into account to make these decisions. You got to say, you got to meet the who, where they are, the businesses where they are, but most importantly, you have to meet the municipalities where they are. And that's one of those things in development. It's about getting all those things to come together to be able to drive innovation. And I think that's what's really cool. Big shout out to Dennis and all the team of the Housing Innovation Alliance to get the characters of the story to actually get developers like you here from different places around the United States, but also where we're physically all here in Colorado to have the governor and the mayor and the different, you know, the policy makers to meet up with the innovators nationally and then locally to put all that stuff together. I think that's a key thing of what this conference is doing.
Absolutely. And this is the only way where we change the trajectory of our community growth for the next 50, 75 years. We have to re-engage policy, the development, and the community together to understand and build this intention. And we look at it from a standpoint of what we call the regenerative value system. And what that means is that we want to create capacity in these communities, in the available resources, in the opportunities for the people that live there, and the amenities that are available for the community to continue to grow and become more as they move forward. And it's tough because we're coming out of this industrial extractive model of understanding of our economy, right? So
right.
Especially starting in the 70s, we went to this high push into efficiency. And there's a lot of value in that. Efficiency is very important in this industry. But at what point did we actually start looking at cutting the quality? And it's not necessarily the quality of the products. I mean, the products that we're building with today are much better than they've ever been. But I'm talking about the quality of the experience in the communities. So I want you to think of every major 5-lane, 6-lane road that has the strip malls and things down it. What's not there? The people that are walking and experiencing that in a daily life, we kind of split that out. And now we're seeing post-COVID this kind of remix. People saying, you know what? I liked being outside. And if there's one positive we can take from that whole experience we went through as a country, It's the fact that we realized our outdoor experiences in our communities are important. And that means tying back in the small businesses and getting those community hubs restarted and rebuilt that allows that housing to be in there. I don't know about you, but I don't like sitting in a commute in a car for 20, 30, 40 minutes a day.
100%.
And I want to be outside doing things. And this is where development, and when we're looking at with policymakers, with the developers, but it also has to engage the financing side of it to say, okay, this is what community wants, but our system was designed to put everything into its single-use zoning models so that way we could easily govern it from that top-down model. But we have to kind of repackage it. We're seeing it. I mean, it's all over the country. We're seeing this, and it's been going on since the early 2000s. So this isn't like a new thing. We're just seeing an acceleration in this model coming out in our communities.
Yeah, as we work to close this thing out, when I ask you the question, is it top-down or bottom-up, I think the one-word answer is both. Right. And it's all about meeting in the middle. And that's
Absolutely.
What we call the Art of Construction Master Facilitators community. And our tagline is not the MFers that you think of in construction.
Yeah.
And you have to break through the ceiling to figure that out and figure out the governance and the theory and the practice of putting that all together. As we close this thing out and we go to listen to the policymakers talk to us after all morning, we listen to the innovators talk to us about the pitch fest. What a cool dichotomy.
Absolutely.
Of putting those two things together. And then we'll spend the rest of the day talking in these hubs of the spoke and the wheel to say, how does the art of construction come together, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we'll spend the rest of the time today. But that's where this podcast here is, the questions that we always ask. I'm very intrigued for this question from a third-generation developer that is now really looking to innovate and move his company forward, but not just for your company, but for the good of the art of construction. I can definitely feel that passion and why you're here in Colorado as a developer in Michigan to bring policies and bring innovation back to your business. But what is your crystal ball for the future when it comes to technology and construction from your point of view?
So the most important piece is understanding what is the purpose and setting the values in the community and then looking at the technologies. I mean, we have so much around us. This place, being at places like this is so exciting for me because just so much is going on. And then finding those technologies that can align within those values, that can help us address the labor issues, help us address the speed of construction. And then from the policy standard standpoint, help us speed up the entitlement process so that way we can deliver the projects at a lower cost, because that's how it comes together. Is it is going to take some incentives, especially as where the economy is kind of resetting itself.
Yeah.
But as we move forward, how do we reset this as a group? And when we can put those together, and the communities that put those together first are the ones that are going to win, because they're going to create the experiences that people are going to want to come to. The businesses are going to go there because the workforce is there. And then when you have those experiences and they continue to build on themselves, that's how we see this growth.
Well said. On our pre-interview, you were talking about how you're compiling different research and documentation. We'll make sure to put all that in the show notes.
Yeah.
But can you give the listening audience, just if they're listening, if they want to go Google or where you're putting this stuff together to compile Brent's source of truth within the art of construction?
Yeah. So my website is brentforsberg.com. Our company's website is lansingrealestate.com. And you know, there's a lot of books on there and resources we're putting on community growth pieces. And then my research as I go through the executive PhD program here at University of Denver will be on there as well, which will be looking at how do we apply these values, how do we build these connections in communities, and then when we find cool innovations, we'll be sure to put that up there too. And we're definitely going to have this podcast as one of our resources, because this is just so much fun.
I love it. Well, the final question we always ask before we go down and hear from the policymakers, and then we're going to be doing follow-up podcasts where Dennis and I are going to do a recap from this whole thing. So we'll be weaving all these different stories together. But what is the one thing, Brent, you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
Yeah, build your network. And this is the key. So understand, read, listen to podcasts, but get out in the community. Find people that are passionate about the community. Figure out what they want. And then that's how we build the products for them. And then understanding the policy piece. And this is where having those connections. You mentioned the fact about municipalities being important. In 2018, our company listed municipalities as one of our core customers, because we realized that they are one of the most important pieces. If they change zoning or something, and we're halfway through a project, it's not getting built. So having those connections, building your network is the one thing that I think builds businesses the most.
Awesome. Well, what an honor to have you in the Art of Construction Master Facilitators community and sharing your story and your passions and alignment. Thanks for stepping up and telling your story.
Thank you for giving me the time.
All right. Crush it out there, tribe.